Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Andor, Season 2, Episodes 1 through 3, which we probably need a more concise name for. The first arc of Andor Season 2.
Act 1.
Act 1 of Andor Season 2.
Call more cakes.
My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. I am your chief of derailing conversations, and very excited to be here.
Do you have like a little speech that you give to the new people who come to the agency and want to join the derailing conversations agency?
I just will point out that, again, this is a great show. I'm so excited to be back here talking about Andor and the show that Cyril Karn is in, because it's a different show, but I still like his show as well.
Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Sagrona!
Sagrona Tima!
Thank you. Yeah. It's good to be back. It's been a while since we've talked about Star Wars in a recorded environment.
That's true.
It's not been that long since we've talked about Star Wars.
I was going to say, flip over the little flip sign. Since we've talked about Star Wars.
I feel like you guys text me Star Wars links on a virtually everyday basis.
Yeah, that's just life.
Do you want me to stop doing that?
No. I really enjoy it.
Okay. I'm happy to stop. I'm only doing this. As a sign of friendship. I know it's confusing, but this is what it's like to be my friend.
When Star Wars Day happened in Japan, what was it, 2-3 days ago?
We call it Star Wars Celebration.
Star Wars Day is fine. I literally woke up, and the first thing Dan says, not good morning, is, okay, so here's the news we got from Star Wars.
I said it in exactly those words.
You didn't. But you're like, you're certainly just like listing fun things for me.
The news from Star Wars is coming in. All right, so Disney has decided to make things difficult on us by dropping 3 episodes of Andor every week. I will say, it's worth noting, all of these little acts are individually written and directed by the same pair of person. So I think they are kind of arguably basically just movies for all intents and purposes.
What is a movie?
So all 3 of these episodes were written by Tony Gilroy and directed by Ariel Kleiman. And so they kind of form a little, beginning, middle, end sort of trilogy.
And each trilogy, I think it's fair to say that each trilogy is going to be, this is 4 years before the Battle of Yavin. I assume the next one will be 3 years.
Yes.
Then two, like,
they have established they jump in one year, I think, per group.
Guys, I am, by the way, I am so excited back talking about Andor again. This was show just reminds me of like how much we were watching the recap, and even to watching the recap, I started to tear up and like, oh my God, the show did so much.
Yeah, I watched like a YouTube recap, and then Disney released an official recap on the Disney Plus app, and I watched both of them.
Because
I edit the Disney one's real tight. I mean, they know how to craft it,
but it's good.
And it's well edited, right? Versus the YouTube one was, it was a fan production. It's fine.
They can do it.
But yeah, I was really excited. Also, like, I feel like I've remembered everything. So it's like, it's like, I don't actually really need this, as opposed to like, there's other shows where it's like, I don't understand what's going on in this show that I've been watching for 2 years. Sorry, Wheel of Time.
Yeah. I started reading the books and then realized there's a reason I didn't read the books. It also helps when they know what's going to happen in season 2. They know what to emphasize in the recap, which also makes it a lot better.
Yeah, there was one character who showed up in the recap that then appears extremely briefly in these new episodes.
And you're like, who is this guy?
Thank God that guy was in the recap. Otherwise, I don't think it would have taken me a moment to remember.
I'm just confused. Which guy are you talking
about?
It was
Torturer. Dr. Gorst.
Oh, yes.
The one who like tickles her.
He appears in one.
And when she's sleeping, he like drags her with her arm.
He's in the horrible dream sequence.
His worst torture of all time. Tickling.
All right. That's a really unfortunate way to represent torture in our new day and age. But we're proud
some
to
people don't
say
like tickling.
That this podcast, it's challenging that we have to cover 3 episodes in 1 week, which we have to do because
contracts.
Of podcast rules. But we have a new sponsor. Yeah, we have a new sponsor. This podcast is now brought to you by fascism. I see no problems. I don't see any conflict of interest here. Let us continue.
Bad news, they're also not paying us.
Oh.
Because they're fascists.
But we negotiated with them. We had an understanding.
Yeah.
This deal gets worse and worse.
We were the first to cave. Isn't that entitled us to something? Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Apologies that, I don't know, are we allowed to bring the real world into this episode, or do we pretend that we only live in Star Wars land today? What do you guys want?
I never want to talk about J.D. Vance again, so, you know.
I had not brought it up, and you just did.
He knows what he did.
Without fail. All
right. Should we talk about the TV show? So here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to go through each of these storylines and talk about the character, you know, the sort of characters they hinge around and what goes on in those storylines.
Do you want me to get the dice out?
Nope. Do you want to draft? Does anyone want to draft a character? So here are the storylines we're going to identify. We have Cassian.
Cassian.
We have
Cassian Andor. It's his show.
Yep.
Put some respect on it.
Or,
well, I mean, his name is the show. He's definitely, you know, we'll talk about it. He's a little on the sideline.
Mon Mothma.
Yep.
So good.
Who
so
is
good.
Me. She exclusively on Trandrilla? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Bix and crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Who are on Space Nebraska.
Space Nebraska, that's right. And I would say Dedra probably is the other Cyril's story is kind of adjacent to hers.
Yeah. I mean, and I know there's one important scene that's not on Coruscant, but basically the Coruscant story.
The Coruscant story, yes.
And there is one other person who leaves Chandrilla and ends up on Coruscant briefly, but not in any significant plot ways.
Yeah. Well,
that sort of hooks into some of the storylines.
And what's his Luthen? I'd probably tell those two together.
Yeah, there's some dovetailing as we get towards the end of these three.
Yeah. So Dan, do you want to pick what you're going to talk about?
Oh, I mean, I was going to allow one of you to go first.
It's your show.
It's our show, Tony.
It's my
show.
That's
not true. Get to go first.
Kat, I've just been updated.
I think.
Please don't think about this for very long. You've already overthought it.
No, I'm terrified. I find this actually very stressful because I'm very bad at doing the recaps.
Yeah. I mean, no, you're great. Is that what a friend would say?
We're not friends, we're co-hosts.
Okay, I think of you more as casual work acquaintances.
I don't know which one.
You were interested in talking about the Mon Mothma stuff.
I love the Mon Mothma storyline.
Do you just want to talk about music? Is that what you want to talk about?
And also the fact that I think that wedding hikes need to come as like a legitimate practice. I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can do Mon Mothma.
I think you've chosen.
I can do Mon Mothma and Luthen. That's a lot.
That's right. We'll help you out.
We'll help you, which is to say we'll interrupt
me.
You.
No, it's great. It's great.
Helping.
Look, I'll help you guys too.
Help. Oh, okay. Dan, you can choose next. It's your show.
Oh, okay.
No, it's my, wait.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there are so many good ones.
I remember when we were going to choose this randomly by a dice roll and we would have been done now.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Let's do the...
We should have done this beforehand, actually.
I know.
Planning. I thought you were going to do it all.
I thought so too. And then you're like,
I said, go with your gut.
Okay. This was my gut made some mistakes. I'll do Dedra's story.
Okay. I think that leaves me with Space Nebraska.
Space Nebraska. We still have Cassian. I can do Cassian too.
Do Cassian. Last pick.
No, I'll do Cassian. I really enjoy it. I was going to leave it out there because I do enjoy the Cassian story a lot, even though I saw some criticism of it. I thought it was delightful.
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
People were annoyed by it, but that's okay.
I know. I thought it was great.
Well, I can explain why.
Yeah, we'll get
wrong.
Into that.
Should we start with that? You want to start with that?
Let's start with
Cassian. It is his show.
It's his show.
Okay, you go. Tell us what happens to Cassian.
Cassian. And so a year later, after the events of season one, Cassian is basically undercover as a test pilot at an Imperial facility on Sinar, a planet we've never seen before, but have been referenced way back.
I think West End Games.
Yeah, Sinar Fleet Systems. About,
yeah.
Oh, it's a long time. Anyways, he has basically is working with a mole/defector who is helping him steal a prototype TIE fighter. Which he basically very confidently strides in the hangar, and he does, and then realizes he cannot fly it, crashes it into many things,
so good
to get it out of anything.
I thought of it as basically someone stealing a car and discovering that that car is
a stick shift Lamborghini that if you touch the pedal, it will slam into a wall.
But it's okay. That Lamborghini has a machine gun mounted to the side of it.
And
also, a bazooka.
Yeah.
boy, great sequence, very funny. Great work with Diego Luna there. He basically steals that. He has a little dogfight to get out of there, and then jumps back to the planet where he's supposed to meet the other pilot who will take that on to the next step. Unfortunately, that pilot is gone and has been replaced with a group of incompetent freedom fighters slash rebels who don't believe who he is. Yeah,
the kids who got kicked out of Occupy Coruscant.
They're like one of those, it's like a misfit team of losers in a sports movie, except they never get it together.
They have no coach.
Yeah,
they have no coach.
Well, yeah. Mai was in charge,
and she's gone.
Keep going. And anyways, let's talk about these.
This devolves into this weird little pseudo capture the flag game where Cassian is captured by, they decide to, you know, they can't decide what to do with him and this prototype fighter. They think he's a pilot, but they want somebody else to fly it because they're stranded on this planet, and to get off the planet, they need somebody to fly it, but the other person that they have who's a pilot can't figure it out. This devolves into tension and fighting, and they, one of them shoots the other one, and all of a sudden they're divided into two factions, one of whom is in Cassian's old ship holding Cassian, the other whom are in the new TIE fighter ship. Cassian is actually the only person here who is even remotely competent, even though he has been beat up by all these people.
Yeah.
No one is in charge.
I know. It was a kind of a fun play where, you know, we kind of showed, like, is Cassian good at his job? Because he was not great at stealing that spaceship, but it's all relative people.
Yeah.
Because
yes. Right? Yes.
here's a jungle full of like 20 kids who should call their parents to come pick them up.
I do enjoy that this is just the right level of he tries some like psyop stuff at a couple points, like, oh, they don't trust you, whatever.
Yeah.
And like in a different show that would have worked and like eaten at these people, but these people aren't buying exactly what he's selling. But he's game, he's trying, and in the end he manages to sort of get the upper hand on one while the others are distracted. It doesn't hurt the fact that this planet is also besieged by some sort of terrifying monster.
Right, yeah.
In a
yeah,
in I think dinosaur. Just a hilariously dark scene where everything is so tense and it just rampages through and kills a bunch of people.
Except, so two things. One is three things. One, totally called that planet was Yavin 4. That was great. Two, Dan and I were sitting next to each other be like, please be doing rock, paper, scissors. Please be doing rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
Please be doing rock, paper, scissors. And it was, and it was a really good one.
It's like Bear Ninja Cowboy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the I want to say I loved this entire thing just because both, it was like childish and they were fighting over inconsequential things. They had guns. They were incredibly threatening, and it was very high stress. And like
several people die.
Yeah, the script writing, the jumping, and the editing, and like everyone was so whiny. And I totally believe these storylines of like the brother and Maya, and who was the second. And you could see like the dynamics they presented in that group. I thought were really good. Right.
I
thought that each of those characters had full storylines behind them.
I think we've all kind of been in a group of those people. Like maybe that helps if you're like,
Dan,
oh,
you can,
yeah, I
you
know
can
these
call
people.
It a podcast. You can just call that group.
But
there were some Dungeons and Dragons character vibes there.
I was a big fan of it. The look of it is great. The yard. Yeah. I do think the writing in that was stellar.
I think it's great. I think the people that didn't like it, I'm just gonna try and interpolate for them because they're wrong. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on in these people's heads. I think they probably didn't like it because it's showing this is the rebellion, and guess what? Some of the people who are in the rebellion are fools.
Yeah,
right.
It's also the early days of the rebellion. They don't have a structure. Well, they have an organizer. These are all the different cells.
I believe, and I don't think you need to know this to like understand and appreciate the episode, but I believe that specifically this is part of the group. Remember in season one when Luthen had the choice of like pull somebody out, but like potentially burn a source or let a group die? I think that was part of this group.
I
right?
got that impression too.
And Saw Gerrera specifically talked about this
Maya
group.
Pei, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, the Maya Pei Brigade.
They're near Republicans, you know, he calls them, but
yeah. Hard to know because, you know, consider the source and Saw Gerrera thinks everybody is soft and weak, but these guys are pretty soft.
Yeah. I think part of what worked for me was like it was a reminder that in season one we had all these discussions of the different groups, the different cells that had different goals and could not come together.
And different methods.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like Saw versus Luthen, etc.
And this is a big group with a bunch of people.
Right. And this is one cell in and of itself that can't even get its crap together. Yes. Right.
But like, even the like, which rebellion are you?
Yes.
Yeah,
right. That bit, right, where Cassian, again, the relative skill level, like one of the things I liked about this is Cassian is actually fairly competent despite, you know, some of his shortcomings. Mm-hmm. But here, he's just got dumb bad luck, right? And yeah, like they get the jump on him and he can't get away and he's just outnumbered. And I liked the realism of that, right? It's like, yeah, these guys are idiots, but there's a dozen of them and they have guns and there's only one of you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I love that it's like kind of like he kind of quote did everything right, but he still gets screwed. And I think that's one of the great moments of it is that he's like, he's just undone by circumstance, essentially.
And yeah, if you look at different like resistance groups and revolutionary groups and whatnot, like there's a lot of infighting among them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like you look at this group and it's like, I mean, theoretically they have ideals, but like they don't have it together to get off this planet and they're fighting about who's in charge. And it's like, you guys need to just like figure this out so you cannot die in this jungle. And that is beyond their capability.
I do have a question of like, I am curious to know if Cassian will ever send anyone back for them. Dan shaking his head.
No way.
But
I don't think there's a form to fill out for that. Like, you know.
But I think what's strange about this is, regardless of that criticism, I found this group far more believable as like an actual, there's a reason they were having a fight. I believed why they were attacking each other. Going back to, you guys remember Skeleton Crew, that really one-off random episode where you have these two groups fighting, but you don't know why they're fighting.
Oh, yeah.
This was way, and again, I love that we're fighting
almost
over
no time with them.
No, yeah, you know? But we're fighting over like 50
melons
yards
that are garbage. Yeah,
50
yeah
yards. And, yeah, and that was
the thing where
so
they're like,
good,
we're gonna use ropes to rotate the TIE fighter, and it's like it's moved a centimeter, and it's like this is gonna take hours.
They're gonna be close by the end.
Reminds me of like a like field day, right? Going the little it, very
that's what
field
it feels
day
like. Capture the flag.
I had a lot of Lord of the Flies vibes.
I love my favorite moment maybe of this entire circumstance is when Cassian is weaseled out of that one guard, like who they are. And he's like, oh, yeah, we're on the same side. And they're like, well, who do you report to? And he's like, I'm not going to tell you that. And like, we told you. It's like, you guys should be better about that.
Yeah.
He did it. Yeah. What, he was CC'd just on a group chat that he should not have been CC'd.
No, reference. When they like set on right away, when he's walking through the jungle and he's like, there's 15 blasters trained on you. And they're like, why would you say how many they are? It's like, really? Now is when you're going to argue? There's not in front of the prisoner.
But again, believable. They didn't have food packs. They're multi food packs. No. Haven't eaten the melon. Like they just, it was good.
And it's effectively tense, I think, in that end scene where even though they're doing the stupidity of the rock, paper, scissors, like again you feel like okay, and Cassian's slowly trying to break out, and I had that legit moment of like, oh my god, is he actually gonna make it to that ship? Like I think so, because we know he's gonna survive, but you know, he was on this mission, and is that gonna actually come to fruition or not? I don't think we know. So
we should probably mention, so we don't get an email about it, the ship is specifically a TIE Avenger,
yes,
as appears in the TIE Fighter video games, but this is its first on-screen canonical appearance of it.
Yeah,
so. I did love later on when he has, again, I think we talked to great extent in last season about how the Rebellion used a lot of the old tech because it's easier to fix and you can do in the field. Mm. The scene where he has to take the very fancy brand new TIE fighter and like try to like get the two cables to work.
It spins the whole ship over.
As someone who is constantly like, I need a USB-C and I have a lightning cable, I really felt that scene. But yeah, I do think that's like, if you think like, I was trying to think beforehand, like each arc is, if to like degree we're advancing the story, right? And I feel like this arc was very much telling the story of the Rebellion is still a bit of a mess, right? Yeah. It still very much sells, and they're still learning how to work together, and I think it's like it's believable and good.
Especially you can kind of see why they like, you like, especially I feel like it kind of validates like the some of the scenes in Rogue One where it's like, yeah, Saw Gerrera is not going to be in the same room as these guys.
Yeah,
like
right.
That doesn't work, right? Like, and it kind of, I don't know. I feel like they're a joke to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Saw Gerrera is like seven guys in a cave, but like,
But they're serious.
But like, do you want to be with 25 goons?
You actually raise a really good point there. I think two things is like, one, yeah, there's still a lot of, and I think the Mon Mothma story is like more about the rebellion leadership still making mistakes. But this one is very much about, there's still sometimes a bunch of goons, they're sometimes silly, but like, there's definitely an overarching organization, right? The fact there are cells, that's more. And then the second thing to your point on mistakes is that's actually probably a really good reason, like, why the Empire still doesn't take them seriously, because the Empire, like, if our friend Deirdre came across
Star Wars Deirdre.
Deirdre, but spookier.
Yeah, Star Wars.
Deirdre came across them and would be like, this is not a real threat. Like,
I would
how
wipe
is this
up in an afternoon. Yeah.
I can kind of then see how, jumping a bit to her, maybe do her storyline next, is like, this is a type of group that I could easily manipulate to become the Gorm threat.
Yeah.
Gorman.
Yeah.
Gorman. The spiders.
Do we want to talk about her next, or do we want to talk about somebody else? You want to talk about Mon Mothma? Since we're on rebel footing?
Let's do it.
Mon Mothma?
Yeah.
All right. So I love this storyline. I've been thinking about those last scenes all the time. So let's come to it. A year later, Mon Mothma's daughter,
Leica camera. Leica vegetable?
I watched your subtitles too.
Leica, like the swan from
Leica. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Leica is getting married to the mob boss's son. We're back on Chandrila. We get to see the Mon Mothma estates. And we basically go through it's a 3-day wedding. So like, I think synonymous to like a lot of like some cultures have very long day weddings, with each night being a different day or being a different ceremony. We sort of, it's the traditional Chandrila wedding, going through step by step. And I think a couple things interesting that happened this is one, also at this wedding is Luthen and his assistant Clea, and they're not there at Mothma's invitation. But we're actually invited there by the mob. Skolden is his name?
Davos Skolden.
Yeah. And they're bringing a gift. But as we go on over the course of the night, there's a lot of dancing metaphorically between Mon Mothma's friend Tai, who is actually... Tay. See, you guys are helping. I like it.
Yeah.
Tay, who helps set up the foundation in season one, which is essentially laundering money into the rebellion. And over the course of the three nights, it becomes increasingly clear that he's basically made bad investments. His wife has left him, and he would like something back. That there's going to be some sort of number, a little unclear about what exactly that is, but he essentially now has leverage on the rebellion. And I think this is important because we learned in season one that Mon Mothma insisted that he was trustworthy, and like they opened the circle to like let more people in.
Childhood friends or something. They go way back.
With some implication they might have been lovers, I forget.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really
clear. There's the thing Mon Mothma's husband
parent accuses them.
Her. Is this extortion? I think is a question some people have asked.
Extortion or blackmail? I've never understood the difference.
My answer is yes. It's 100%. It's extortion. You know? People are like, hey, that's just friends talking. And I was like, nope, it's not that.
No.
It's called read between the lines.
Read between the lines, yeah. You know, I mean, especially he's got the line where he's like, I realize that I'm the one, like, you know, hanging out to dry here.
Yeah.
I feel like undervalued, he says.
Yeah, everyone else is doing great except me. Where's all the money?
Where's mine?
And he's getting drunk. Though it seems like lots of people at the party are getting drunk. He's getting drunk and he keeps being drunk, potentially. And I think they're concerned that he is or is about to talk to Skolden, right? And so he's doing stuff that jeopardizes their operation. And you have another conversation where you read between the lines between, you know, Mon Mothma and our pal Luthen. So,
yeah. And towards the end, so that was one of the key plot lines of basically Tay and Mon Mothma. The other interesting one is Mon Mothma's relation to her daughter, and essentially realizing increasingly that she doesn't want her daughter to go through with this, culminating in that incredible scene before Leica goes out to and basically tells her mother that she was drunk right now and like was so powerful, and basically said I don't have a good verb for it, but basically
she repudiates everything her mother is trying to sell her to her, which is say like, hey, you don't have to do this. And it comes from clearly a place of Mon Mothma being deeply unhappy in her own marriage, which is very clearly one made for advantage or convenience, right?
But what's good about that is Lita basically finds that, I think, fundamentally insulting, like that her mother won't even support her in this moment. I think one of the questions, one of the biggest questions I actually have coming in this entire series, which I know seems really small, is how will Lita feel about the fact when she discovers that Mon Mothma is running the rebellion? Like, I am genuinely curious to know what that is. Betrayed or excited? Yeah, I do get the feelings that Lita is a pro-Empire person.
She's very conservative. They make a lot of references, especially in the first season, to like, this stuff came, like, fell out of fashion, but is now coming being back in, like, the conservative sort of angle.
Make Chandra look great again.
And I like, what I liked about this sequence, too, is, like, it actually, they've shown us a very deft hand with dealing with characters who are kind of side characters and get, you know, fleshed out, as we just discussed, with all the rebels. But, like, both Lita and Perrin get some good bits here in their interactions with Mon Mothma, that even though they're not like central characters, you know who they are. And I especially like that Perrin is shown to be like, though I think he is a jerk and not a good husband, he clearly loves his daughter. I think they're like, I like his speech.
Good partners. Well,
I don't know about that, but like,
he's at least a good dad.
He's a good dad. And like, they don't hate each other. They're not throwing things at each other. Like, they live in a perfectly fine detente, right? It's not like, but I think there's actually this story, and then there's also, we hit the storyline with Clea, who's trying to make contact with Cassian, and then Val in the background being sad that she's not with her girlfriend, or ex-girlfriend. Yes. But I think, like, this is my favorite plot line. The reason I like this plot line is I think the character, Mon Mothma, is such a good character and has advanced so much. But I think a number of things, like, one, it just reminded me how much I loved Andor, and I was thinking about it and comparing it again to Ahsoka. They never have to, Tay never has to actually say, I am extorting you.
Yes.
They never say they're going to kill him, and they never have to show that he's going to be killed, and yet it's perfectly clear what's going to happen. And like, even the line, like, it must be nice, I think is the line to her, like, that
Luthen says,
it must be nice for you then. It's so good. They don't have to do that.
I mean, we all got it. I feel like maybe there's some people who didn't get it. But maybe those people didn't even make it to season two of Andor, because there are the people that don't like season one of Andor because it's too talky. And I was thinking about them as I watched this, and I was just like, oh, you poor kids who can't watch a thing where, like, you know, we're going to spend like three episodes at a wedding, and it's all going to be intense conversations about stuff where people are saying stuff, but they're not really saying what they're saying. And it's like,
and there's
you
a lot
know,
of significant looks across the room.
Yeah. And I'm like, they're sorry. And then, like, it means something when that guy bumps into somebody else and doesn't say anything and keeps going, right?
There's a confidence here. I think that's part of it, is confidence. And I thought about this too in the scene, we'll get to this in a second, but in Bix's storyline, there are, to your point about being too talky, there's a lot of pieces of that where there's little dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, especially, you know, sort of the intro section with Bix and like kind of her trauma that she's dealing with, which again is not like her being like, you know, I'm really traumatized, like, ever since that guy tortured me,
that I was traumatized by,
I've been really sad. And it's like, no, it doesn't ever say that. It just expects you to get it from the rest of it. And it's like, you know what,
I was just thinking about the events of season one.
Allow
me to recap them here.
And then there's little things here, just great details, and Dana pointed this out to me, it's just like how much thinking they're clearly doing in the background, right? So during the wedding ceremony, three of the parents are wearing the same color, and Perrin's wearing blue, which is super
interesting.
What
does that mean?
But it's also, Perrin gives the welcome speech on the second night. It's not a couple speech. So it's like, oh, I wonder if maybe it's a heavily patriarchal society of like all these things. It's just, there are little details like that.
But
that
it makes
him
pop, right?
And it's just so interesting. It's like, this is a real believable culture that we're looking into.
And Kat pointing out when we were watching the elaborateness and the detailed nature and the great fact that it looks great of the costumes are themselves fantastic. I loved the wedding costumes because you kind of catch little details of the inspiration, right? Like, there's some Japanese like things in there, but it also doesn't feel like, hey, we're just ripping off those cultures.
Well, and part of what Andor has been so great at is, and we've seen weddings and funerals now, which are really great ceremonial things where you see a lot about a culture. Yeah. But he has shown us, and we got to spend three episodes on Trandrilla. We spent all those episodes on Ferrix. We have these things that are recognizably Star Wars, but not let's go back to Tatooine, everybody. Yeah. Love Tatooine, right? And like
Vespas.
You know, Chandrila, we hang out at this wedding, and it's very much through the eye, like we're following Mon Mothma most of the time, which is very cool and effective. But like they have this whole world built back there, and there's the scene where her daughter and all the daughter's friends that all dress the same go and see the wedding dress together, and it's like there's all these things, and they don't need to spell out to us that
and the return of the statue here. Of like you can totally believe that they don't have to explain who that other culture is. They don't explain when these things are. They could just say, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I could see that happening.
And it's because that's not even important to it, right? It's the importance of that scene is like this guy is obscenely wealthy and is just trying to show off because he wants to be accepted by the upper crust of society. Yeah. Right?
And there is, I mean, there is kind of like a weird thing there where it's like this is like the super rich people basically, and we have that we're cutting back and forth between that and like here's a bunch of dirty kids in the jungle. Here's a bunch of, we haven't gone to Space Nebraska yet, but like here's a bunch of undocumented workers in the fields, right? Very intentionally let us show you how the rich people of Star Wars are living it up in a way that is 100 times more effective than Casino Planet.
I was just thinking the same. You know,
and it's so, because I appreciate what they tried to do. I'm blank. What's the name of the Casino Planet? Canto Bight.
Canto Bight.
Canto Bight. I appreciate what they tried to do there, but they were not successful. Right.
A lot of it is just it was
too fast.
It was
heavy-handed.
Yeah, it's heavy-handed. Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah. This is
as Guy English would say, ham-fisted.
Yes, this is.
He enjoys a heavy hand.
It's a good heavy ham-fisted. You know, again, confidence is a big part of it. It's like I don't need to spell this out because they'll get it. And I think, despite the fact that it's maybe not the best, you know, overall, if you sort of take it as a, it's not overselling it to say this is kind of Star Wars Game of Thrones. I don't think that's exactly the right thing, but you kind of know what I mean, right? It's that prestige-y sort of level of like, we've got multiple storylines and we're doing stuff that's kind of grim, but also has different layers to it. And there's a lot of stuff going on, and we trust to a certain extent
Game
people
of Thrones
will figure it out.
Didn't invent literary TV, it was a big entry point for like,
for genre stuff.
Look at what TV can be. Look at what genre can be. Yeah. And you know, if that got people in the door, whatever, take it and run. TV can be complicated and people figure it out.
I do think, I wanted to go back and rewatch season one, but just didn't have the time. In the recap, just reminded of, especially the prison episode, of what I don't know if they did this in earlier, what I'm trying to say in season one, I can't remember how much we jumped around with the editing versus staying with one storyline the whole episode. There's a lot of episodes where we just stayed with Cassian on the planet with the goats. What this was like, this was fast editing. It was like the four stories, never more than like 5 minutes with each story, back and forth, back and forth. And it was jarring to be like, and Chandrila, and then like, oh yeah, this patch of mud when we're playing rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Well, and Planet of the Goats, by the way, was what they were going to make before they changed the Planet of the Apes.
I would have preferred Planet of the Goats.
Sorry,
it would have been cheaper.
I had a thought that was reminding me of another show I watched recently where they did a lot of intercutting, and I actually think this is far more effective than that was. The Daredevil show, they do a lot of intercutting between the two, the sort of main hero and the main villain, to show you they're on sort of parallel tracks.
Get it?
But it's, again, a little heavy-handed and a little too jarring in that show, whereas I think even though it's jarring here, it didn't give me like whiplash of being like,
especially the end where, you know, the party is ramping up or whatever, like the final stage of the traditional Chandrilan wedding rave presented by DJ Bot. You know,
I love when they all scream when he comes in, like, this guy, we love this guy.
That's totally true. Wedding. It's like when the DJ comes out and all the kids, the little kids, the girls are so excited.
It's like a bar mitzvah.
It was 100%. Well,
I mean, they are bar mitzvah 14, age.
Yeah,
which is kind of weird.
I don't want to think about that.
Also, that, you know, I'm a little concerned just about the dimensions of DJ Bot. We don't know that he doesn't do interrogations on the day.
They have they had a number of lines. They're just SKUs of different products.
Yeah. Don't get those messes. But like with Mon Mothma drowning her sorrows and just kind of like dance flailing, cutting back and forth between that and other stuff is, you know, that's some masterful visual storytelling there.
But
so,
building on that, so two things. One, again, interesting again, the show is the fact they clearly coached everyone how to dance, because those dance moves were not what we like. they were all doing, like, everyone's doing the same kind of dance move, but the same way if you, like, go to a club, and I've been, like, probably a decade of, like, the same way, like, it was very much not coded into, like, Earth dancing, but it was very, very clever that
they
did that.
Were all, they were chanting the thing, which is funny because it's the name of the planet Cassian was on.
Yeah,
so they're all saying Nyamos, so they all know the song too.
Yeah,
so it's like,
I do enjoy that.
What is that, like the electric slide for them,
pretty
basically?
Much
yeah.
Okay, boogie woogie.
I also thought a lot about, I was wondering when we first got into the dancing if we were going to pull a Godfather to show the wedding and
that
intercutting with the murder, and I like them even more that they, I don't know if they did it intentionally, like, definitely got Godfather vibes, father vibes, but they just stayed with Mon Mothma as she goes deeper and deeper and deeper into the dancing, because she's in the center, and it's just,
and I love, there's even, there's that,
of it.
There's the scene where the mother, the wife, or wait, wife, or it's actually, is she the mother or is she the aunt? I forget.
She's the mother of the groom.
Okay, of the groom, who has had no dialogue.
Yes.
Right. And I is there in the background, like looking kind of like
a
pissed off
the
to
bride
be there.
Of Frankenstein.
Yeah. And she like grabs on Mothma, is like, shots, you know. And they're like, and then she's just like off into the thing.
Yeah.
I also appreciate that, like, whatever kid her daughter is marrying, not a character.
That guy.
Not someone the show has any interest in.
He's a plot device.
And it's but it's also like, because it's not about him, it's about Mon Mothma, and like that
it's
is
an arrangement.
You know, they have, there's the discussion about them where it's like, does he know what he's getting into? And they're like,
nope.
And he's like a jerk at that one point where she has to go comfort.
Yeah, he didn't
want
to hold her hand.
It's like such a 14-year-old thing. I love it. I love that.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
so good.
Maybe 14-year-olds shouldn't arrange marriage. I don't know.
Maybe it's hot take.
I'm a little. Is it an arranged marriage? I was confused about that.
So it's, and the you know, in the flashback they give you, or the previously package suggests, is like, oh, I'm not suggesting a betrothal. I'm just suggesting a introduction. But clearly,
and there's a thing where the daughter is like doing the traditional stuff that Mon Mothma doesn't super approve of or doesn't love or whatever. Right.
Right. And so I
it's
think
like,
it is effectively. I mean. And again, this was not uncommon, even uncommon at that age in many societies, you know, hundreds of years ago here.
Even less than that, but
true. But, you know, like, there is clearly a degree of feeling like, you know, political slash business alliances being solidified
so
by,
like,
relationships. Yeah.
You know, maybe it's not you have to marry this guy, but you have to get married for our culture at 14. You get to decide who or Right. I mean,
want to be part of, like, I feel like there's almost an appeal to her daughter of like,
this is,
it's like feeling grown up, right? It's like, well, I can do this and I'll be a grown up, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you're still a kid, right?
You're
like,
14.
Yeah. You should not be making this decision.
Kids are smart. She also might have picked up the vibes like her mother didn't want her to do it and therefore she wants to do it. So,
yeah. It's complex and I like that.
Yeah. And I think there's a reason that child marriage not as common as it used to be.
Yeah.
to the point about the jumping back and forth, one thing that I thought of as a sort of analogy is like contrast can be very powerful, right? Mm-hmm. Contrast in like graphics can be very powerful, contrast in colors, etc. But there's also a difference between that and being like, hey, I want to do red text on a blue background.
Yeah.
That's high contrast, but it also really hurts.
Makes your eyes bleed.
Yeah. So
doesn't make you think.
This is what I think works really well here, is like they are doing good contrast by setting these storylines against each other without getting to the point of being like, do you get it?
Yeah.
And like that's what works nicely.
And sort of like thinking again, like the trying to take away like what was the key theme of the story. Like the key thing for me, like advancing the story here again, was like advance all the characters' plots, awesome. And just like again that final scene of Val crying because her ex girlfriend shows up to go kill Tay. Is, I think, again, Mon Mothma is increasing. I took this as Mon Mothma getting like just showing her dedication to the cause and her willingness, like she accepts, she doesn't fight at all, that Tay has to die.
She doesn't fight it. She's kind of mourning it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the drinking and the dancing is like, I'm lost, right? And I am physically acting out. You know,
and
because I'm in real deep.
Yeah.
And maybe this is where I wanted to be, but the implications of that. Yeah.
And
the knock on effects of it are.
And she's responsible for his death. She was the one who brought him on and she made the wrong call. She was confident. She knew his personality and she was wrong.
And now her childhood
and
friend
now
is dying.
Her kid is getting married and her friend now has to be killed and, because of her decision and like for the rebellion. I do think something there of like, I don't know if she regrets it, but I think it's just, again, if this is where I go back to, like, I think there's some really interesting, this is also the rebellion growing, right? Yeah. And learning how to make the right choice.
This is a large part of the theme of the overall series, I think, right? It's what are you willing to sacrifice? And like, where are you in the level of like your commitment to the cause, right? Because that's Vel's story too, right? Is she's like, oh, I'm totally all in, but also I really miss my girlfriend. And you're like, well, she, you know, she is like committed to the cause, like capital
C. 100%.
And, like, she's a true believer, right? In that last scene where they see each other and, you know, she's like, oh, you were here the whole time, or you came just because he called you to be like, hey, could you kill this person? Instead of like, I called you a bunch of times, you never came to see me. But it's true with Mon Mothma. It's true with Luthen. We had Luthen's entire speech about sacrifice in the last season. It's true with Cassian, right? And like, we're going to see a little bit more about that in a minute. But like, everything is about, yes, rebellions are important. And it's kind of... I think one of the, we'll talk about this, I think, at the end of this season, but I think one of the great strengths of this is that I do think it actually makes, I know there are people who say it's like the best of the new Star Wars movies. It's not my favorite, but I like Rogue One. I like it a lot, but I think this show makes it even better.
Well, it makes it more interesting to understand why they sacrifice themselves.
And also why Jin coming in makes such an impact. And like, you think about the rebellions are built on hope, right? That aspect of it is very different from what we're seeing here. This rebellion right now is not about hope. This rebellion
is
about...
built on hope.
This is like, we're built on bodies. You know?
I think a little bit of that, but I also at the same time, going back to the very start of this episode, when Cassian, before he completely Ubar's flying the TIE fighter and talks to the young woman who is basically at Sinar betraying that, is like, Cassian tries to give like a very compassionate, uplifting, hopeful speech, and even does like a little bit of flirting there, and like it was kind of interesting to see him too, trying to be more the face of the rebellion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was unsure whether or not I should believe him.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's kind of Diego Luna walking that line of like, is he saying what he needs to say in order for her to feel okay? Or does he actually
that's my reading.
This?
I mean, I feel like there's a reason they show you. He goes from there to he's walking through the hangar and he just shoots that droid without even... And I know it's a droid.
The very terrifying droid, actually. That droid was a scary droid.
You know, I know it's an Imperial droid, but like, without hesitation.
He shoots that dude in when he gets to the starship at the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one guy in there, he's like, and he's not going to talk him down. He just shoots him.
No time, right? And you know, they even reminded us in the, you know, the recap thing, the, you know, shooting the guys in whatever that first planet was on in the rain.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, I think it's that again, I think some people who are watching this kind of have a hard time because like, you know, they want to map Luke Skywalker or maybe Han Solo onto these guys. And they are not that. You know, Cass Andor is a guy with some great ideals. But he going to murder a lot of people.
I mean, let's not forget his introduction in Rogue One. Which I think is basically where we're going to get into is he murders a guy who is his informant essentially in cold blood.
All right, we're going to have to rewatch Rogue One at the end of this.
Yeah.
That's every time I finish an episode, that's what Disney Plus prompts me to. And it's like, perhaps you would like to do this. And it's like, thanks, algorithm.
It'll be interesting to see if they ever delve, when we finish Andor, if they ever delve into how people think about the rebellion after it. And I think there's a degree of like, I know we have all grown up lionizer hero, like Luke and Leia and Han, just because we didn't have anyone else other than the Bothans.
And they're all dead.
many of them, at least. There's even the kind
what I was going to say is like, I wonder, like, but now that we have this darker side, like what it really took to win the rebellion, how I'd be interested to see like what history gets told. And if they even, because there is an interesting story you could tell there, like, perhaps one of the reasons the New Order, was that what it's called, was able to come
first
back.
Order.
The First Order came back is because like we kind of whitewashed the history of what it actually took to fight a rebellion. And, like, how, I don't know. There's some interesting, I don't know if they'll ever go down that path, but it's an interesting story. That's going to be laid here.
It, you know, it doesn't exist anymore, except it's stuck in my brain. There's always the EU thing where like Leia rebuilds like a democratic government for the whole galaxy in like a couple weekends. And yeah, you know, there's going to be some mishaps and whatnot along the way, but it's, you know, it goes off pretty great in kind of a like almost like a fairy tale fantasy story thing. And it's like, oh, how will she manage running all of space government and raising kids that might also be force sensitive?
She can have it all.
The problem. Mm. And then, you know, the new trilogy is like, oh no, she's still in a bunker with like X-Wing pilots.
Yeah.
Like she never got to take off the camo. There, and I'm like, yeah. Oh.
That is some of the stuff I like the best in that slash in the Filoniverse stories, yeah, where it's talking about like, how do you turn the Empire into the Rebellion? Like, yeah, that's the story. I would love to see an Andor take on that. Is like, how do you turn the Empire into the New Republic? Like,
Kenobi. We see that in.
No, we saw it in. No, that's how you turn the Empire into
the Republic into the Empire.
No, we see it in Ahsoka and in Mandalorian, I think, where it's like, yeah, we have the Empire, the ex Imperials, who are all given amnesty,
yes,
and stuff
okay,
like
that's
that.
Not sure. Because they're, yeah, on Coruscant and they're like, yeah, they're all being like
educated,
basically.
But like, I want to see the whole Andor take on that, where it's like, we need to rebuild like your entire infrastructure. How the heck are we going to do that? Because
and Anton Lesser is still in it.
Speaking of which, let's talk about Bix and that group.
All right.
I think that's important. It dovetails with our
the planet
Cassian.
Is called, according to my notes, Mina Rao. I think of it as Space Nebraska because it is wheat as far as the eye can see.
Space
I got,
wheat.
I got like space. Real German vibes, or like I got European vibes.
It's called Nebraska, which is settled by Germans.
Nebraska.
Yeah. I think Germany is a lot greener and more rolling. Nebraska is flat and beige. And that's how we like it. So Bix and Brasso, and which I always think of only
not Brazo.
Brasso. So and that kid who I always forget the name of.
He doesn't have a name.
His name is Wilman.
He does have a name. Most characters have names. And their friendly robot are there. And they are, I think this is kind of interesting. And I see what you're doing, Tony
timely.
Gilroy. Timely. They are not actually like rebels. They are. Are they maybe criminals? They're on this planet without documentation, and they're working as mechanics and whatever to help keep things going. And apparently, there's lots of people on this planet who do not have documentation, who have nothing to do with the Rebellion or Cassian Andor or stuff that happened on Fennec or anything like that, right?
The kid, though, was the one who threw the bomb that started the riot. That's why.
Yes.
And they were all trying to get him off the planet because...
His dad was the one who was killed by the torturer.
And Brasso was there, right?
Yes. Everybody, they had to all leave because of the incident on Ferrix.
So, yeah. I mean, it's like, is everybody on Ferrix wanted, basically?
No, I don't know.
They're kind of the ringleaders.
The ringleaders are the ones who have the most to blame for the riot.
Gotcha. So they're here. They're on this wheat planet. And they don't have documentation, and that's a problem because the Imperials show up for the first time apparently in like a decade.
Yeah.
And they show up, I thought it was not in a Star Destroyer, but in like a little freighter scanner dealy. And they're driving around in the fields with their their turret cars, and at first there's not even stormtroopers, but later there are stormtroopers because they are doing an audit. They've shut off communications, and basically everyone's real nervous. And Brasso has his friend who's like the local here who's covering for them, but are worried about kind of like, how are we going to do this like shell game to keep you alive? And we have an appearance of like an officer who is extremely creepy because, you know,
yeah,
guess what? He will later assault Bix. And, you know, this is like your classic depiction of like, basically life is fine here on the Outer Rim. Or maybe I'm inventing that they're on the Outer Rim.
No,
but
it did say that, I think. Yeah.
Life is fine here on this planet. They are presumably, I just have to assume, generating food for like a huge...
Yeah,
part of
I think they said
the Empire.
They
talk about
on
that.
The grain that they produce.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So like, and they're just living their life there and everything's fine. And the Empire shows up to like remind them that they're in charge and count everybody and arrest people that aren't supposed to be there. And there's even, there are explicit discussions about like, well, we understand that like, you need to use, you know, undocumented labor in order to do your work, and the work needs to happen for the empire to be happened, but we can't have that because we're
nuanced
fascists.
Talk about this like fundamentally, like, I don't know how much of this they wrote before we are, but this is why I thought it was like the European first, other than for the moment, putting aside everything awful that's currently happening in our own country. But no, like dealing with undocumented labor everywhere and how important they are and how we incorporated them into our economy, both in Europe and in the US, and like the realities of that, like it was so well done
2 years ago.
Story has been going on for a long time. Yep. And then I think also I wasn't sure if they were going to go that clearly into the commandant or whatever his commander extorting Bix for sex, basically in order to look up, turn a blind eye to her undocumentation. Is like, but that's also a very real thing. And it was like, again, I thought this was a really powerful story.
As soon as he walked up to her that first time, I was like, I see exactly where this story is going, and it is not good.
No.
I mean, no surprise here to say, obviously, like, real Nazi vibes, right? Like, real like Nazi vibes.
Cranked up to 11.
And not to say that's exclusive to that. I'm just saying that, but, like, that is, like, I mean, there's literally a scene, I think, like, this in... I don't remember, Inglourious Basterds, maybe. But like, there's definitely scenes with like the Nazi officer showing up and being like, I want your daughter, basically, like, and we'll let you go. We'll let you go, right? Like, and it not again. I'm not saying it's the exclusive purvey that
happens in our country too. Yeah,
but my point is the empire clearly modeled on Nazism.
You're saying they don't exactly have their best people serving in their officer corps.
I think there are no repercussions. And it's, but to your point of like, these are just three people who aren't in the rebellion. They just got caught up in all the bad things and are just like, they don't want to find the rebellion. They just want to like live their lives.
And they're already living a marginalized life where they're like all living in this basically space, like, trailer park, right? You know, it doesn't look great.
I would legitimately rent that on Airbnb. It looked very
peaceful, I don't think it's intended to sleep for, and you know, it looks like things are a little cramped. They're all there together, and they like, there's even the thing where the kid will what's his space,
Willman, they call him that too.
You know, he's got a love interest, but there's even the explicit commentary that like the love interest family would not approve of it because they are in this like itinerant, lower marginalized group, even in Space Nebraska. Like, it's not, you know, they're at the very bottom rung of the society here, and they are still going to get squeezed more.
It was unclear to me their levels of involvement in the rebellion. Bix was involved in season one, and she keeps talking about where Cassian, you know, being worried about where Cassian's gone, and also Brasso's pal Kellen, he seems to also know that cat, because he mentions Cassian a couple times and being off somewhere. And I like that scene that's great where Brasso gets caught and he basically tries to accuse his friend of turning him in so that they won't think he helped him.
And there's some great acting there.
Yeah, it's
really
good.
Made very clear that everyone understood what's going on.
Yeah. It took me a minute to get it. And you, I think,
they show you a quick look. There's a look.
Yeah.
There's a look.
I think some people miss that look and were like, what does this mean? Did he turn them in?
He gives him a nod at the
He gives him a nod.
Very grateful nod.
And it's, you know, again, this is a show where like you gotta watch everything. It's you know, it's like Mad Men or The Wire. There's gonna be a lot of things where the conversation has the words spoken have nothing to do with what's being communicated. Or not spoken.
Small details and small shots.
And I found this like if this story is also these care, especially Willman's, was just sort of this storyline to me felt like such more of like the Shakespearean tragedy of like wrong place at the wrong time with all the right intentions of like all the characters are trying to leave, but someone's a little early and they're all trying to help each other.
Yeah.
And because of that, all the unintended consequences that end up with Brasso dead.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking. And then the final shot there,
That someone was going to die.
Yes.
In part, I guess I felt like someone was going to die, in part because I think, and it's specifically like, and Cassian's going to find them, and that's going to push Cassian further to whatever the next year brings Cassian Andor, which will not, it's not going to be good, right?
Well, my question is, will Bix and Woman survive to the end of the show? And I think there's a world too, because we know Cassian basically sacrifices himself at the very end, is like, I don't know if I feel good about their futures.
Yeah, I mean, no. It's either, I mean, I think, you either die or you walk away, right? Like, those are the only options at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like everyone around Cassian's going to end up dead. And then ultimately Cassian last, right? Is the trajectory that they're on, cuz the work that they're doing is real, real dangerous, right?
And the Empire is a huge threat, right? I mean, this is the thing of reminding us, like, yes, they build giant space stations and they blow up worlds. They're cartoon villains in some ways. But also, it's they're villains on a very small, personal, intimate level.
And this is not, we're hunting down everyone from Ferrix and looking everywhere. It's like, no, this is just a sweep of people's papers, please.
We're just instilling fear in everyone. Again, and even, lots of parallels to what's going on now.
You know, I think there's almost a thing where they have to like walk back what we've seen in the movies and things like that. Because, for example, I thought it was pretty intentional that like the first group of Imperials that shows up at the like, what, I don't know, store, restaurant, whatever farmhouse thing it is, it's just a bunch of guys in kind of like fatigues, right? And then the stormtroopers come later, right? So it's like you ramp up to the stormtroopers, which is tricky because in other Star Wars stories, like stormtroopers are
they're fodder. Yeah.
Yeah, they're fodder.
So the end of that one sort of dovetails with the Cassian story. Cassian manages to get back. He engages in a fight with all the Empire people. Rasso gets killed by a stormtrooper, and Cassian basically gets built.
That one stormtrooper with accuracy.
Zigged when you should have zagged.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm pointing, and Danny pointed this out when we're watching, is again, the little things of the show. There is a picture of
Marva,
Cassian's adopting mother, that essentially looks like a religious icon. It was very well done.
It's a little bit. I thought for a moment they were going to have a moment where the lieutenant spots it and has like heard of it or whatever. But again, to your point, it doesn't matter. It's not about that. It's just about everyday evil that they're doing.
Yeah. Just here to fill out his spreadsheet.
Some great scenes. I mean, I think that whole fight scene with him and Bix and Willman is brutal but like well shot, right? I mean
it's a kind of violence you don't see in Star Wars a lot.
I mean, the scenes where she hits him with a couple times with like the wrench, and then he walks out, and and the guy's like, boss, you okay? And then he just falls and hits his head on a container or whatever. A dark moment of humor, I think. But yeah, so that's the end of that time. So we have one last plot line, and that is Dedra and also Cyril.
Dedra!
Family life with the fascists.
Yeah. We'll start, however, with Dedra attending. Dedra and, I always forget his name. Anton Lesser, who is great.
They go to what I would like to call Berghoff, right? That was...
It's like they're in the space. They're the Eagle's Nest up in the Alps PowerPoint presentation.
Given by our old pal Orson Krennic,
Ben Mendelsohn chewing the scenery.
First of all, he was great in Rogue One. He's great here. I'm glad we get more time with him.
He loves fabric. People. Fills That's out why that he's cape, talking about right? all those spiders. Capes, spiders that make silk. It all connects.
A couple things on this one. I know, like, one is like, I know Dan is self-employed, but like, Tony, you've clearly been in a meeting, right, with like a boss or a boss's boss is like, guys, this is really important, and then talks to you for the next hour. And meanwhile, you're like, this is not important. This is not even remotely important, but I have to look like I care right now. And it just had huge vibes on that. I just love that.
Lots of great Dedra Partagaz like expressions shooting across the table. My personal...
Lovely, like, the spider video went on forever.
That video is amazing. And I want to applaud the filmmaking that went into just the creation of that, because the vibe that they have gotten there is exquisite. It is such a perfect 1950s like
so good.
Newsreel
edutainment. Yeah,
it's like those things we had to watch in like Driver's Ed, right? Like they were all from the 50s. But it's just it's well shot. Every and little detail in that feels perfect.
The it being too long is like an intentionality to it.
Like, I mean, it's going?
Well, and it's such a great because we think he's like. I mean, it's. I don't know about you. I assumed he's here to talk about the Death Star.
I thought so too. Yep. Yes,
he cut. I mean, he kind of is. Yeah. But not to them, right? And there's also the kind of weird fake out of like that. I guess we didn't know that like. Maybe the cover story for the Death Star is that the Empire is trying to like independent power. And it's like, independent from who? You're the whole galaxy.
Oh, no. But Tony, you missed the best part. It's unlimited power.
Unlimited power.
I told it to Kat, I was like, I want to believe that somebody is just trying to legitimize Palpatine's insane ramblings from Revenge of the Sith. What if we turn that into a platform? Like,
yeah. Have they greenwashed the Death Star?
unlimited power.
Unleashing Imperial energy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Unlimited energy. When is that? I have no idea. Anyways.
I love that the meeting has people from all kinds of weird different, like there's the guys in white who are, what are they? They're the security services.
ISB.
You've got people who just seem to be normal military. And then also there's people that must be like
the enlightenment guys.
They were so
incredibly creepy.
And I just love how they had
are your two cartoon villains who are in here to remind you of what Star Wars Imperials are like. The people that take the glee in, like, they put the glee in genocide.
But the same way, like, the blocking, they mimic each other, and they often go into the two of them. But they go into the same pose.
Because that could have been one character, and making it two is so much worse.
Oh, it's so good. And, like, they have to get cut off of, like, no, we got the idea. It's just...
But then there's some other weird, you know, there's some other people that look like maybe they're some kind of civilian administrators or something.
There's an engineer, I think, at one point.
You know, again, this show does not take any prisoners with their wardrobe, because this could have just been a room full of generic Imperial officers with different little colored blocks on their thing. And it's like, no, you get two of those. And actually, they're orange, which I don't even know if we've shown you before. And everybody else, something weird. Fix them. I don't understand how ties work in Star Wars, which seems to be, I think that's Tony Gilroy's main contribution, is everyone has some weird tie that like goes in through a slit in your shirt. It doesn't make any sense to me. Good job, everybody.
I will say, you're right. Mon Mothma's political, we missed it, by the way. Her dresses were spectacular. All the clothing is great, but I cut you off, Dan.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I was just thinking this whole setup is a brilliant scene in and of itself. And as we learn, it's kind of just an audition, right? Yeah. Like, Krennic's just looking for someone to give him... He may even know the answer that he wants ahead of time.
Yeah.
Right?
And we do... There's like, you know, blink and you'll miss it. There's basically a line that's like... Deirdre has a job, obviously. She's still with ISB, but has had some kind of like blip on her record from like
season one, right? Basically everything goes
To me, that was like the trajectory of that character, like the last we see of her and Cyril Connor like in an alley, and it's like, what happens to them now? Do they still have jobs? Do they have apartments? Or are they just going to be hunting Cassian Andvar forever? And the answer is like, no, they go back to their lives.
Right. And not only that, but like as Partagas says to her later on, like, you've been trying to track down Access, which is Luthen, for a year, and you have made no progress. And she's right. That's the thing. We know she is correct about what she's doing. But she lost
the
thread.
I love the line. Catch the guy first and then make him famous.
And then make him famous.
So
good. Yeah. That's a solid bit. I mean, I like
it's
all
a good
that,
bit. Yeah. It's frustrating because we know that Deirdre is competent, right? So there is the like, how much does she have to play ball with, you know, this guy who, hey, things don't work out great for him either.
Right. So it's political, right? Like, and this is what Partagas says to her. It's like, look, you can kind of write your own ticket. This is a big deal. And I like this whole thing is about they need this thing to coat the lenses of the super laser or whatever.
And we're going to destroy like a planet that is, you know, that has a bunch of people on it that apparently exists in Star Wars continuity.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And do you guys want to Dan look that up? Do you want to say what
I mean? It's
from video games.
It is also mentioned later on in Rebels as being the site of this is potentially a spoiler, but it's for a thing that's been out for years. The Gorman Massacre, which so is what drives Mon Mothma to resign from the Senate.
Wow.
And the guy who we actually see talking to Luthen about the fact that he was from Naboo or born in Naboo,
he's actually spent time on Gorman. Yeah, and he's in Rebels
and is actually one of the ones who helps bring Mon Mothma to meet up with our friends on the Ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had forgotten also, you'll enjoy this, voiced by Josh Brenner, who was on, you will know as on Silicon Valley as Big Head.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Who's done multiple voices in Star Wars.
I was
going to
say, isn't he also in
Resistance?
He's the chatty man. Alien.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
But yeah, this was, and then again, we have to talk about the mother. We just have to talk about the mother.
Yeah. Yes. So the other part of this, yeah,
I totally caught it again. I was like, I bet they're nervous about his mother coming over.
Oh, it was, yeah. When again, the show does not tell us, but we just cut to apartment and they're there together. Yeah. Right?
Dedra and Cyril live together
in a pretty nice apartment.
Like, it's a little unclear. Yeah. They're above ground, which is a big deal.
Been promoted twice.
We get that amazing.
I don't understand how he's been promoted twice. Didn't he leave his job for
he probably took a vacation or something and came back, but then he uncovered there was a bunch of purchasing agents working together.
Yeah, he has an amazing
scene. He was on Ferrix.
He has an amazing scene where he is basically giving the speech to the guy who is coming on board, where he had his little speech, and he's all puffed up as usual.
Look at how proud I am of my work dystopia that I work at.
Boy, is that actor great. He has really nailed this weird role. It's a role, again, as Kat said at the beginning, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know where his show is, but I will watch it because he is magnetic in the way that he appears in these scenes.
Just the fact when he has to watching him and his mother interact and getting more and more fr- and again, the fact of your comment about we've all worked on groups like that back on Yavin 4. We've probably all had experiences with that with our parents. And at some point, you just have to get up and go to your bed and lie down and stare at the wall.
First of all, that is an amazing... I have to comment on this because I noticed when I'm watching it. It's an amazing bit of blocking because you realize that room is open.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's just kitty corner to where they are. And you get that great two shot where you kind of see that and they kind of pan over and realize it's right next to the dining room.
It's right there.
He didn't go far. No, she just looked around the corner.
Door.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that set design. It was well done. I also want to comment on
the mother is, I mean.
Oh, yes. She's really good.
I mean, we had already gotten scenes with her where she was berating Cyril while he's eating his weird space cereal and stuff. But
Uncle Harlow.
Yeah. But this is all the way up, right? I mean, she is unbearable. I saw some people who were a little bit confused as to how old the character of Dedra was supposed to be. I think Guy English, listener Guy, was a little confused about, because she said she was raised in the Imperial kindergarten type thing. And the actress is in her 40s, so there's some confusing timeline there about...
So I have a headcanon, if you want the headcanon.
You've headcanon. My headcanon is that they retconned the name, and so nobody talks about what it might have been called 10 years ago.
That's part of it. The other part of it is she is a true believer. And she views it as of course it was Imperial kinder care that shaped who I am.
Yeah.
Because that is, it's the Empire is responsible for everything.
Well,
I even
so when you say your parents were arrested for crimes.
Yeah.
What that, kind of,
strong emotion. They're what crimes were those actually?
Bank robbing or attended rebellion. A protest?
Yeah.
Free speech.
Yeah.
I also think that in my mind, I didn't put her in her 40s. I put her in her, I think, especially Sarah, they look more early 30s, mid 30s. Yeah.
It is an interesting, I keep comparing this to the way these things are portrayed in, the original trilogy, where basically a bunch of kids defeat the Empire. And it's these are these are grownups with middle manager jobs. Right. Yeah. And it seems she's climbing up faster, at least, she spends a lot of time hanging out with high ranked ISB people. Cyril does not.
But he's still making progress. He's still in prone. And it's what I'm curious too. They Krennic says you can't tell anyone about what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, like, again, what to Dan's point of, like, when does, how does, is, does Cyril know what she's doing? Do, like, do they have a murder board with Cassie and Andor in their room somewhere of, like, how they're, are they still tracking down their spare time? Like, they're so weird, and I shouldn't like them, but I love those characters.
I mean, they're she has the two dresses and it's like all white or all black, and it's like, and there is there anything in that apartment that is not monochromatic?
No. I love, clearly they did the joke after, like, you had just seen everything Mon Mothma had wearing. Clearly they know color.
Yes.
They made that very visual joke. It's literally what she's wearing. She holds up a different white period clothing that looks exactly like the white clothing she's wearing.
Yeah,
so funny.
Yeah, that's so really funny. Well done. I enjoyed, I mean, the dynamic in that scene is great, right? The scene with Cyril leaving and that moment where she's like, okay, let's get into this is what's gonna happen.
Let's set some boundaries
like that, and that is the
I'll
most...
make sure he calls twice and stop talking about Uncle Harlow. I've looked at his criminal record.
I love this is the most, it's the happiest we've ever seen her, I think. Right? Right? She looks almost gleeful in that moment, with that exception of, I think, the time she tortured Bix, which she also got pretty happy about. So this is just her thing. But yeah, the way she's like, this is how it's going to be. Yeah. And then they come back around and they're having the very pleasant conversation about everything. Everything about the blocking, staging,
the scene where the mother is going to come in, but the camera hangs with Dedra, and like we see Dedra like basically tensing up waiting for the mom to, like, and it's like we can hear the mom because she's around the corner,
that
we know
so
that she's
good.
There, but we haven't actually like met face to face yet, and like,
and a couple great lines, like the bit where she's like, you don't look anything like I thought you look like, don't you want to know what I thought you looked like? Like, that is a bait line, right? Like,
yeah,
so good. Anyways, I have no idea where that plot's going. I'm fascinated.
Yeah, I don't.
It's a blast.
I don't know where they need to go. Yeah. Oh God, I hope they don't have children.
They're probably they're probably born in a jar. We've already met his.
Oh, that's true. We have already met his dad. Yes. You're right. You're right. So yeah, that was the first.
The first
three chapters
book. It's interesting because some parts of it feel more self-contained than others. Like the Mon Mothma thing is a kind of a complete story. The Cassian and Bix stories are kind of complete. It's really the Dedra Cyril plot that I feel like it has left the most hanging. Like, because it, what we've seen is great, but is kind of
where's
small stakes, right? Like, it's not really about what's going on other than that meeting scene with Krennic. But
their plot is basically currently now spiders in a dinner party. Yeah, and the most awkward fondue ever.
Yeah, space fondue. Interesting choice for
you have to stand
and
use the fondue. That's weird.
Well, and for meeting with your parents at like a formal thing, that doesn't seem. I don't know. Interesting choice. Yeah, it is. I am curious to. I mean, this is a real. Obviously, we all love Andor, right? You know, we're all pretty happy about it. Very interesting to think that like. We don't, the next episode doesn't pick up where we left off.
Yes.
We're just going to jump forward.
That, yeah.
I mean, that's such an interesting approach to a season of TV. I think it's somewhat interesting that Disney Plus has decided to release 3 episodes a week. So all I do is watch Andor right now. Like, not complaining, but it's an immersive experience.
It is. It feels very much born out of a desire to keep the
treadmill people
going.
To only talk about this for the next month. Mission accomplished.
Well, that, and I mean, like I said, like the treadmill, the way they've positioned where it came, it picked up directly after the Daredevil show ended. I think there's another Marvel show that it will basically pick up when this finishes. I think
really,
early
what's
June?
The next Marvel show coming?
I don't remember, but I'll have to look. There's a Ironheart, I think, is coming at some point in.
Oh, June, I didn't realize any of them were that close.
Yeah. Anyways, maybe not, but it does feel like they wanted
the content assembly line requires it.
It's tough, right? Otherwise, it's a 12 episode season, and I think a lot of the critiques of the first season were like the two things why people felt the first episodes were slow.
Yeah.
And I don't get that, especially in this season where the first episode starts with Cassian stealing that spaceship, which is a high octane kind of thing.
I felt like that was almost like, all right, Star Wars nerds, you want to see like an explosion? Here you go.
It does. It did feel a bit like that. But also, it kind of feels like they want to help you out. I think some of the people who really liked the show, as we did, felt like in some ways, my God, like every week, like, oh, I want to get to the next chapter immediately. Mm-hmm. And it feels like maybe I'm worried about the too much of a good thing sometimes where it's like, oh, yeah, you want to go to the next chapter? Here's three chapters at a time. You're like, whoa, slow down there.
Yeah, they were all, the story are very much closer to each other. I was thinking of them in my mind of like comparing it to like Severance, which is probably like the last show that like every week of like, okay, what happened? And it's all everyone wants to talk about at work is Severance. And every Friday night, we're like, okay, we're all going to watch Home and Go Home, watch Severance, right? This is...
Water cooler TV, as it were.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Exactly. More coffee pop, but yeah. But this is... I feel like each... I'm trying to think back now. I don't know how well each of these episodes actually stand by itself, right, for a one night. And I wonder if they would just get more criticism... I can't have it both ways to know what would have happened to counterfactual, yeah. But like, yeah. I don't know. Anyways, I enjoyed watching all three in a row. We literally did watch all three in a row. It was just like watching a movie, but I do think I'm going to miss it very quickly.
Yeah.
I have already, I watched them over two nights. I don't remember how that worked out. I couldn't tell you which one, but it just felt like all I was doing was watching Star Wars. And I liked it. And it was like, I was excited to watch more. But it is also like, now I'm going to be sad when it's 4 weeks from now. Yeah, and there's no more Star Wars for
a very long time.
For a very long time. You know, maybe I'll go back. I'll watch Rogue One and then I'll go back. And,
yeah.
Well, we have and there's also, stuff. we are in the Star Wars celebration time where there's a lot. There's going to be literally a lot of Star Wars. You get 12 episodes of Andor in a month. You get 3 episodes of Light and Magic, which is the kind of docuseries about the history of ILM. And they're also going to drop more animated Star Wars on May 4th, right?
The Underworld, yes.
So what if too much Star Wars and then no Star Wars for a long time?
Speaking of which, a couple quick pieces of mail as a reminder. Yay. You can find us on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. You can find us on Blue Sky at acp.theincomparable.com. And you can always email us at acp@theincomparable.com. Over on Mastodon, we just had Rick said, sitting down to watch Andor Season 2, really look forward to seeing it and looking forward to the ACP show.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Rick. Very kind.
I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did, or more.
or more. And then I think the only other things I had was email. People were very excited on Blue Sky as well and said they were happy to have our show coming back.
We did it.
Good job.
Check.
Mission accomplished.
I don't remember if I mentioned Matthew's email to us where he sent us the Bunky Dunko shirt in Bangkok.
Nice. I think
we talked
about
himself, which is great. Thank you for that. I wore my Bunky Dunko shirt just the other day. It makes me happy.
I wear it at least once a week.
Bunky Dunko.
Paul wrote in with a suggestion of something else we could add to our queue. Hi, ACP. Love the podcast. I'm all for more occasional excursions outside the Star Wars compound. The moonlighting episode was unexpected and great. As a suggestion for the next gap in new Star Wars content, I suggest you watch Akira Kurosawa's The Hidden Fortress.
I've never actually seen it either.
I'm sure you all know and
I've
you
seen
hope inside
other
now
Kurosawa...
and will spot the inspirations drawn from it.
I'm easily swayed by emails from people who I don't know who seem kind and thoughtful. So that's how to trick me, people, to be kind and thoughtful.
Now I know. I don't think I've ever watched any Kurosawa, so I would be down for that.
Some great movies in there. And a lot of the other, he borrowed heavily from a lot of the Kurosawa movies, but I think Hidden Fortress is largely considered to be the one that he stole the most from.
Who stole the most from?
George Lucas.
George Lucas.
Yeah. Jay writes in, I've rewatched season one of Andor again, and the gold heist and the one way out / I can't swim episodes were still just as good, and I can't wait to see what they've done for season two. But I have to wait because it's not released for another 5 days, so I've been rewatching the greatest lightsaber battle ever over and over, which I believe is, he then sent a YouTube link to what I think is just the Princess Bride Inigo Man in Black fight, but with lightsabers over it.
I've seen that. That's great.
Looking forward to hearing your commentary of Andor Season 2. How are you going to do it? One pass podcast show for each 3 episodes group, or still do one show per episode and stretch out the podcast past the end of the show? Either way, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, interesting idea. Jay, should we just do this one about episode one?
Let's go back and fix it.
Let's just throw out everything we did now. We're warmed up. We're limber. Let's start again.
Edit out.
Welcome back
we talk
to
about
a complicated
season.
Profession.
Yeah, I'll just take out the.
Just edit it out.
Yeah, that's really more of a Guy English. Sorry. Guy had a recording problem, and he edited out a lot of things he did say on that show because of a recording problem.
I'm just going to mention that Guy English said nice things to me about our podcast.
He does like the show, and I know he listens, yeah. And I love him deeply. I love him deeply.
There's
he
no accounting
that.
For taste. Yeah.
You're one of my favorite Canadians.
Finally, Chris writes in with Light and Magic. As we turn to Star Wars adjacent media while waiting for the return of Andor, I was wondering if you had a chance to watch Light and Magic, the Disney Plus ILM documentary. Season 2 dropped last week. I thought it had an interesting take on the prequels. Chris, P.S. Music by John Williams, in quotes, is also very good, which I believe is another little documentary. I don't remember if I watched that one. I think I did. I watched the first season of Light and Magic, which I liked quite a bit. Even though a lot of that stuff I had kind of seen.
Can we watch the second season together?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought the season one was really great. Tony, I know, has watched season two, so...
I watched the first episode.
First episode.
Out of three.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll watch that too.
I am curious. So it's, I mean, for folks who aren't familiar with it, the first season, and these are short shows. Season one, Light of Magic, 6 episodes. It's basically like early history of ILM becoming ILM. I think it kind of goes up through, I feel like, Jurassic Park is probably about where it ends. So it's like, and it covers basically their shift from doing stuff with models and whatnot to early CGI. And then season two of Light and Magic, I believe, or at least the first episode, was all about making the Phantom Menace. I am kind of curious, like, I mean, I think we can agree that the Phantom Menace is like a technical triumph. I am curious how they will, like, will they cover how people felt about it?
I think they are more concerned with the
revised the history to the Phantom Menace was an unqualified success. I don't know. Because there's other parts where they are very upfront about, like, this shouldn't have worked, but it did. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just a bunch of, like, literally the message of season one of ILM of Light and Magic, which I really love, is like, if we had known better, we never would have tried because success was like impossible and we just got lucky. And like, I kind of appreciate, like, they're also clearly like, they're like a lot of very smart people were involved in this, but they also recognize that like a lot of luck was involved and that, like, you know, and even like, I mean, I feel like there's kind of this thing where it's like, you know, George Lucas is this genius that like put all this together. George Lucas is like, I don't really get computers, but it was clear it was going to be something. So I put all my money in it and I'm glad those kids did something with it.
Yeah, no, there's some good
like,
bits about that.
Like it's, there's some weird juxtaposition of like, is everyone here a genius or were we really lucky? Like,
they were also and weird like, and scrappy both, and yeah, underdogs and kind of in season one, which is kind of fun, but.
I think both can be true.
Yes.
You know, there's even, I appreciated there's a discussion of like, what is it like to work for George Lucas as a boss? That like, he was probably a challenging person to interact with who was not a great communicator.
Yeah, that's all I had. So yeah, send in your letters, please. We'll be back next week, obviously. And I want to again thank everybody out there who's not only a listener, but also the people who support us as members. You can go to theincomparable.com/ACP, or nope, theincomparable.com/members. That's the right URL.
That's the right URL.
You can go to ACP, hey, but presumably you know where the show is.
People, I don't know about you. I don't know when you're listening to this. I don't know who you are. That's how podcasts work. It's strictly a one-way medium. But, you know, like, things are really hard right now for a lot of people. And I think one of the things I can do is make things that bring people amusement and joy. And that's part of why we do a podcast. We are not in it for the money. But if you felt like sending us a few dollars, we promise to spend it on silly things. I promise to spend it on silly things.
I promise to spend it on food and... shelter tuition for my child.
Kat has invested everything in a well-chosen index fund. I promise to spend every dollar.
It's the wrong time for index funds.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh no. members bonus investing advice from Kat. Kat, where should I be?
No. It's just okay. It's fine. It's fine.
Yep.
Fine. We're our time
not,
for a while.
We're not financial people. Anyway. Thank you again for everyone out there for listening and for supporting the show. Really appreciate it. I would like to especially thank my co-hosts, as always, Kat Benish. Thanks for being here.
Sagrona!
next t-shirt. Tony Sindelar. Always a pleasure.
Sagrona Tima!
Sagrona Tima Solum? Ting! I don't remember what the last word was.
I don't know either.
Thanks, everyone. We'll be back next week to talk about the next 3 episodes of Andor. Yep, it doesn't stop now. But until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members